there is money out there. People are making money hand over fist in the cannabis space. Those investors have been in the mining space before, most of them at least. Attracting those will be the challenge of the next decade, probably, getting them back into mining. But there is capital available, is my point.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by Orin Resources. Orin is a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major, focused on finding the next globally significant discovery to create enormous potential upside for shareholders. It's one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. With Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management with a history of success and advanced and monetizing exploration assets, Orin has been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and NYSE under the ticker AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYN resources.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for tuning in to Mining Stock Education. I'm Bill Powers. If you want to engage the show, you can always reach me at bill@miningstockeducation.com. Well, I'm speaking today with Kai Hoffman. I was introduced to Kai at PDAC about a month and a half ago by my friend Trevor Hall from the Mining Stock Daily podcast. And Kai is now located in Vancouver. He previously lived in Germany and before that lived even in the United States during high school. So he's a world traveler, a world citizen, so to speak. But he focuses on the junior mining sector and has done so for about a decade or so. Currently, he's the managing director of SOAR Financial Partners, an investor relations and public relations consultancy, now based in Vancouver. And in September 2016, SOAR Financial acquired Orin Inc., which is one of Kai's companies. And Orin Inc. is one of North America's leading financial websites in the junior commodity space. With that being said, Kai, thanks for coming on Mining Stock Education.
Oh, Bill, great. Thanks for having me here.
So I said a little bit about your background, but I think it's more interesting for you to share a little bit about your background. How'd you get interested in the finance and investing, and how did you find your way to focus on the wild, wild west of junior mining?
Well, the wild, wild west it is, definitely. I got involved like 10 years ago. You said it pretty much really, really accurately, pretty much a decade ago. And it started out of dumb luck, to be honest. I used to work at a small corporate finance boutique in Frankfurt, and we structured our own deals, took them public in Germany. And one of the deals we worked on back in 08, 09 was one of the rare earth deal. And that's where I caught a first whiff of the market. I was a young kid back then. I was 24, 25, just fresh out of university, and saw how much money there was you were able to make. And we got to market the company in San Francisco at the Hard Assets Conference back then when it was still hopping. And the Vancouver show, I think that was in 2010 when the conference was split between the two hotels there. I think it was the Hyatt and the Fairmont Hotel Vancouver. And I met some great people. Some of them, like the first, second person are still really good friends of mine that I met in the industry. One of them had a booth next to me in 2008, and I'm still good friends with them. And I got attracted. Obviously, there's money to be made in this industry if it's done correctly. And But I also had a call. It was a couple scares in the industry where I figured out, okay, no, this is not how I want to make my money. And hence, I'm probably focused, or I just have a different approach to mining IR and mining corporate communications than others probably.
Did you start out on that IR side, or what was your, when you were 24, 25 out of college, is that where you began on the IR side of things?
I would call it that. I was an office administrator for a while. Then I merged into a role of marketing. We did roadshows for our clients. One of them was a Trofa oil company. The other one, as I said, was a rare earth company. We started marketing the company in Germany to newsletter writers, journalists, and it sort of grew into that role. It was never really defined as an IR role. It's just really supporting where support was needed. And it turned out to be a marketing role. And back in 2011, just before PDAC, I started my own company, SOAR Financial Partners, as you mentioned.
So that would be eight years ago or so. When you started and you developed your business plan, did you kind of factor in the boom bust cycle of mining into your business plan?
Well, I had fantastic timing as I started my company February 2011, where the market was just still very frothy. But only 3 months later, I think everything went sideways. And I had one client that paid some ridiculous prices. I called back then, and that kept me afloat for a while. In 2015, I almost got wiped out, and really appreciate where I'm at right now. I live in Vancouver now. I moved here 3 months ago. The sun is shining. It's a blue sky. It doesn't get much better than this.
And you focus on the state of junior mining where you're at now. I mean, in Vancouver now, what is your typical day look like? Is it mostly meeting with junior mining execs, or is it researching the state of junior mining finance?
It's both. You get a good feel for the industry meeting people on the streets and having meetings, but I sort of have to limit myself, otherwise I wouldn't get any work done, and do the research and talk to other newsletter writers or other parties involved in the mining space to get a feel for what's happening and for what we can put into our research here.
How would you analyze, the president here in the United States, every year he does the State of the Union. How would you succinctly talk about or describe the state of junior mining finance right now?
It subtly changes pretty much every week, right? And it's the state of finance. We're still, like, I called it a PDAC, and I think we called that our report that we put out with the PDAC together with Orin Inc., the junior mining or mining finance at a crossroad. And I think that's pretty much where we are. The market doesn't know where it wants to go. Macroeconomically speaking, the gold price should be much, much higher. But I'm not a gold price forecaster. I leave that to others. But it subtly changes. It's seasonality. People are more prone to invest earlier on, then it wanes off. Right now, for example, I'd say the market is pretty much dead. Junior mining finance has really slowed down. But state of finance is a good question. We saw 2016 as a false start. 2017 started off okay, but then things died off. 2018 was another lost year. And let's just pray that 2019 doesn't turn to be the same.
You look at the numbers, open financing, closed financing, and study these type of things. Are you finding that there are many financing that are being forced to offer full warrants? What's the breakdown between financing that has a full warrant, half warrant, and no warrant? Do you know those off the top of your head?
Roughly 50% of the financings do come without a warrant, which is fairly positive. But we see more and more companies having to give in to investor demands and having to offer a warrant. One financing I saw the other day, they offered a quarter warrant. I think it was really just flipping off the investors who demanded it, because I think that's just symbolic. But other than that, like, a lot of companies have to give out at least half a warrant with somewhat interesting pricing to make it interesting for investors right now to even look at a financing.
Yeah, and in some of these companies, they announce a certain number and then raise half of the number, or they announce it and they withdraw it. Do you keep track of those at all?
No, we track, well, the open and close, and I do have to take a closer look at how many of the financing that have been opened do actually close. I'd have to run the numbers on that, but opening a financing is fairly easy. Closing it is the hard part.
Speaking in generalities, when you analyze the companies that are able to effectively announce a financing, raise the full amount, not offer a warrant in today's market, what are some of the key characteristics of those companies?
Well, there's a few groups in junior mining that are still very, I would say, powerful, but at least capable of raising money even in a bad market. The banks trust them, the investors trust them. They do have a track record of success, and with that success or past success comes future success, meaning they can raise money. I think one company that just recently did that was Minera Alamos. I'm sure we can mention the names. It's all public knowledge. Mm-hmm. But the Osisko Group, the Oxygen Capital Group, for example, or even the Discovery Group out of Vancouver, they were all able to raise money. Like Bluestone raised $22 million in a bought deal that was upside twice. And those are the groups in a bear market, I don't want to use that word. It feels like saying Voldemort, but in a market like this is probably key. And then another thing you'd have to look at is jurisdiction. I think that helps as well with the capability of raising flow through financing in Canada. You might be able to weather the storm here a little better than others.
You worked on the corporate communications side. I would like to talk to you a little bit about company press releases. We chatted about this, you and I, off mic in the past. When you're analyzing a company's press release, and I'm thinking as I ask this question more about early stage companies that are announcing drill results or something to do with their resource, what are some of the dishonest tactics that you don't like, or what are some of the things that should be said that aren't said in these press releases?
Well, I'm often puzzled by the timeliness of press releases and the urgency to put stuff out. Sometimes you see press releases that are completely outdated when they're put out, which makes them completely irrelevant for me. And we talked about this off mic, and there, you know, IR press releases where companies give away 5% of their market cap for marketing purposes. And in my opinion, that's a very material press release, but the market or the public only hears about that pretty much a month later, when after the shares have been issued. And that's something I'd have a big, big problem with, because that is material news that is share price influencing. And if you look at the share price of said company, we're not going to name it here, but that is something that should be closer looked at also from regulatory authorities, in my opinion.
Did you ever, I mean, just based on your decade of experience, have you ever looked, ever observed the regulatory body going back and basically chastising a company saying, hey, you had material news that you did not release in a timely manner?
There have been a couple instances when it came to marketing expenditures, but I wish they would have done that way more often. They criticize companies for using similar words in press releases that might not be 100% accurate, but they're completely honest companies. They go the right way about things. They might have used the wrong word in the press release, and IROC completely exaggerates on their feedback. They have the stock halted for 2-3 days just to change a word in a press release. For me, that's ridiculous, and I think they're focusing on the wrong things. And to make market, or the junior mining is a tough business anyway, to clean that up would be a better or use of time than going after companies using the wrong words. I think that could be done in a quicker and easier way.
As investors, we of course need information to make educated and informed investment decisions. And one of my pet peeves when I started to invest and research this sector is that the information that's available is just not user-friendly. SETI is not user-friendly whatsoever, although there are certain suppliers like Canadian Insider and CEO.ca, which makes accessing those things a lot easier. I was thinking about this with this, the new technologies, the 3D modeling technologies, which basically can communicate visually the potential ore body or a given resource of a company to investors. There are certain earlier stage or developer companies that use this, but do you think that, and do you think it should be perhaps mandated by the regulatory bodies for a company that has at least an inferred resource with a press release talking about whatever they're doing with that resource or drill holes? Do you think maybe they should be required to have a visual depiction of those drill holes they're reporting on and that 3D model in the press release?
Well, your comment covers a lot of issues that I think need definitely addressing. And one of them is SETI, CEDAR. Those websites are probably from the 80s. If at best, when was the internet invented? I think 89, 90, something yeah. like that. I think the websites were set up at the same time. They work okay, but definitely not user-friendly. Trying to find joint venture agreements or material contracts on their website is just impossible. You can't even look, because they're all documents are all scanned. They're not digitized, so you have just pretty much images that you can't search. It's unbelievable how antiquated those databases are. And thanks to other services, it makes them easier. And what makes it easier for investors, as you said, are certain, let's say, third-party providers. You mentioned a couple of websites that make at least the insider tracking more visible. But new technologies are coming up. And one thing I really like is I see a shift in how companies at least present their information. And there's one company here out of Vancouver that really helps visualize drill holes and presentations in a better way. Not making it necessarily easier to understand, because it's still quite technical, but at least more visually appealing. And somewhat technically inclined investor will at least get an idea of what's happening, where the drill holes are coming down. That company's called Verified. I might mention them because I think they do a great job, and there should be a couple more companies hopefully coming out with similar services, just to increase awareness. And companies should be obligated, as you said, and that's a big issue. They put out fantastic drill holes, or apparently fantastic drill holes, but there's no drill hole or map or even location map or anything to be found on the website. Crosscuts, any sections, other people in the industry, way more, influential perhaps than myself, like a Brent Cook, Joe Mazumdar, and others, are frequently complaining about the web companies putting out drill holes but not offering sufficient information to do proper due diligence.
Yeah, and I've even thought, just as an investor, that they should like almost be made to use the word infill or step out hole, because sometimes you don't know.
No, exactly. And without a map, how are you supposed to know? You know, it's super difficult, and sometimes companies work 2, 3, 4 projects at the same time, and trying to keep track of what's going on is almost impossible.
Yeah. Well, if you did have the ear of the securities regulator and you were influential enough and they wanted to hear what you had to say and implement it, what would be a couple of the things that you would want to see first implemented?
One thing that really irks me is how insiders can sell stock without having to properly report it, and sometimes reporting it a year late for a minimum penalty, which is really frustrating because it's happened. I've seen it. Another thing is flow-through financings that need to be monitored more closely. I think it's a big issue when companies issue flow-through financing at the same price as hard dollars. As we all know, flow-through financings come usually with a huge tax benefit to the person subscribing to them. And usually, unless they're really going into a strategic hand through charitable flow-through, and those shares usually hit the market fairly quickly again. So that needs to be tighter regulated. Overall, press releases is a tough issue. One thing that makes Orrin, Inc. unique is because we do track all the financing in this space. And because the press releases are not standardized, we do have a unique, let's say, ability to track those financings that'd be taken away otherwise. But certain standardization probably would be helpful.
Yeah, one of the things with the insider trading, I just don't understand where now with Twitter and technology, someone in China can tweet and literally a half a second later, myself in America can read what they just wrote. So how can a CEO or an insider of a company, when they buy or sell, how could the general public not know that within a matter of literally seconds? So I've always kind of struggled with that, as you've said, that not only do some not report in a timely manner, but I don't see why the public shouldn't have that knowledge almost immediately.
Yeah, exactly. It should be going through a public platform or something. It's for the regulators to figure out, but it's unbelievable. I've seen it happen. It's almost destroyed a company. I almost broke it down to bankruptcy because the share price just dwindled. And if the company was sort of caught in a death spiral, they had to roll back to get somewhat back to a share price where it was meaningful to raise money. They're struggling again. And only a year later, we found out that the CEO back then was selling stock. It's unbelievable. And in my opinion, that guy should be in jail and never be allowed in a position to run a public company again, either director or a C-suite.
When you're investing, let's get to your investment approach. Where do you focus jurisdictionally in your personal investments?
I've really shied away from Africa these days. I think a good example, unfortunately, was Orca Gold the other day, and I've heard a lot of takeover rumors and the company's looking at it. And I've always stayed away just because of that political risk. And it's like, I know the management team, they're great guys. They don't deserve it. But there was a coup the other day in Sudan. And of course, the stock plummeted. I haven't looked at the share price in a while. But last I saw, it was down at least 20-25%. So my point is, I invest money in jurisdictions that I believe are currently really safe, where I'm going to say it again, in a bear market, there's lots of opportunity out there to invest your capital in North and South America, particularly US, Canada, and Mexico, or I personally like Peru these days quite a bit as well, to deploy your capital, you know, the little bit of capital that is available to invest these days.
Would you focus most of your capital on early stage companies? And if so, are there any companies you'd like to mention?
I invest a broad range. Like, I have invested into companies that are currently looking for projects. I own a couple producers. There are companies sort of like Regulus Resources, Rio2, that are either misunderstood or the market just simply ignores or just doesn't pay attention to, which is frustrating. But, in the intro, you mentioned a couple of companies, and it's frustrating to see because they used to be a client of mine. Integra Gold, for example, in Idaho, a fantastic project. The share price is just dwindling. No reason. They have gold in the ground. It's an old past producing mine. If they really wanted to turn on the jets, they could be back in production in 3 years if really necessary. That's in a perfect world, obviously, with financing and all available. But there's so many great opportunities out there. And just looking at my portfolio, I think I have a broad spectrum. Not all of them I'm happy about, obviously, and I'm quite in the water on some. But and like Cartier Resources, another great example, a stock that's not moving at all. Anonymous selling, nobody knows who it is. Takeover target. And I could mention probably 20 more that are not even in my portfolio, and I don't mind doing that because there's so many great opportunities out there. You pretty much throw just an arrow at the dartboard and you'll hit something good.
Mm-hmm. But because we're in a bear market, as you said, then you're going to look at their, I assume one of the first things you'll look at is their financial statement to see how much cash they have.
Cash is definitely an indicator, but also just like, as I said, there's 3, 4, maybe 5 groups out there right now that regardless of a cash position of a company can raise money. We've just seen Barkerville raise another $20 million for their exploration program. There is money out there. People are making money hand over fist in the cannabis space. And those investors have been in the mining space before, most of them at least, besides the millennials maybe that just started investing in cannabis. But attracting those will be the challenge of the next decade probably, getting them back into mining. But that's a different story. But there is capital available is my point. And just trying to get those people to come back is the challenge, I think.
For those companies like Equinox Gold that take on problem projects that you know, most of the investment community that follow mining know about, and then you get a kind of a well-known team that takes on this project, what are some things that you look at when you're looking at a company that's taking on a problem project and saying, we can fix it? What do you want to see before you put your investment dollars into that company?
That's a good question, because I don't think I'm the typical investor, because I'm not patient enough. I wouldn't say I'm a 4-month hold kind of guy and then I'm out. I'm usually the bag holder when it comes to that. But even for me, those projects, it's the proof of concept, getting those projects back up and running. Happy to assist. I usually have the vision to see the management team being able to do that. But my personal investment capital is probably not patient enough, and I'd be lying to myself if I was saying it was. I usually hold a stock 12 months, but I usually come in for other reasons. I am, you know, a typical retail investor to a degree. I wish I had more capital to allocate to be less greedy. Fortunately, I'm still young, so I'm a little more risk averse than I probably should be. But they're good management teams that will be doing over and over again. But as I see myself as a typical retail investor, I don't think I'm patient enough to see it through to a degree. I'd be happy to support it, sell it, and know the right investors for it. But I try to put my money where my mouth is, but it's not always possible. Hence, limited funds, right? So,
because you stay on top of the junior mining news, when you see a company have maybe some negative news, but it's an otherwise a company that has things going for it, do you look for those steep sell-offs and then get those quick 40% rebounds? And even as I'm saying this question, Kai, I have in mind like Miramont Resources, where they announced some results that the market didn't like. There was great expectation going into the announcement of their drill results. The stock sold off heavily. There was a negative article written about them, sold off again. And then there was some more positive results, and the stock bounced back from like, I think it was 9 cents to 13 cents, something like that, U.S. Do you look for opportunities like that in the short term, or is that not where your investment eyes are focused?
I wish I was a trader more to take advantage of that. I seriously do. I hear quite a few things on the street here as well. I've been trying to get better at it to take advantage of those opportunities. I just don't have the capacity. I wish I did. Like there are some good opportunities to make money. As you said, Miramont dropped down. It was at 12 Canadian. It's back up at 18. That's an easy 50% within 3-4 weeks.
Yes.
And if you, I prefer to, or I usually trade in stocks that are really close to management teams. And that's probably one of the advantages and one of the reasons I do like the industry so much, because you are quite close to CEOs or decision makers. It's not like you get insert information. I don't care about that. But I do like having access and getting updates when I need them. And being in Vancouver, obviously, is an advantage as well.
Well, you're hearing from Kai Hoffman today. This is someone you want to follow, and his company, Orin Inc. You want to follow their work on the state of junior mining finance. Kai, for the listeners that want to keep up to date with you, your thoughts, and your work, how would they best do that?
Yeah, probably easiest to follow me either on Twitter, at Orin Inc. It's O-R-E-N-I-N-C. Or orininc.com, or just shoot me a message, direct message via Twitter or LinkedIn even. Happy to answer any questions, and I hope it was somewhat insightful today.
Kai, I appreciate the conversation, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bill. Much appreciated.
For millennia, ancient pharaohs prospered from unparalleled riches made possible by Egypt's resource-rich gold deposits. But despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. But that's all about to change. Aton Resources is leading the charge on the Egyptian mining revival. As the only public exploration company in Egypt, Aton Resources has first mover advantage. Focused on their 100% owned Abu Marawat concession, Aton Resources is advancing several exploration targets, including the recent discovery of the legendary Lost Mountain of Gold at Rod Ruin. Learn more about this exciting drill program and other news at AtonResources.com. Aton trades on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.